check. 1 2 1 2 check. 1 2 1 2
Check,
okay.
Check.
So I'm going to move my webcam here because my mic is down, so you can see me.
Oh. Yeah.
Gosh.
I am recording. Oh, you were adjusting your desk.
Yeah. To put the mic. Okay, you will see the top of my head, but at least the mic is.
Dude, that looks funny as fuck. It's like we've got this guy peering over like a
submarine gym. The yellow submarine, the black submarine, the new song of the Beatles.
Okay, Jono! Okay.
Hey.
Jono, how's it going, man? Block thinking.
Block thinking. We're there. How about you?
We're all good. And let me do the official thing. My name is Werner Puchert, and I have my co. Fuck, let's start again. Hey, Jono, how's it going, mate?
I'm all there. How about you?
I am good. And for you listening to this or watching this, this is Block Thinking, and my name is Werner Puchert, and my co-host is
Jean Fengel.
Yeah, and we are two dodgy guys living in Poland, just making a living as creative entrepreneurs, as Jonathan slips away in his water. Great. Great audio special effects there, mate. And also, like, I mean, for you who can't see this, when we started the recording, Jono had his desk like high up. I had, you know, remember there was this TV show. I don't know if it was ever in Poland, but it was, what was it called? Tool Time or Home Improvement. Do you remember Home Improvement?
And there was one of those
classic American things. And there was this, in the show, there was this guy who used to stand behind a fence. And you only saw his eyes ever in the show. Like you never you never saw his full face. Only his eyes. Okay. And you reminded me of him, dude. For you who know when we're talking about Home Improvement, you'll be laughing. Jonathan is not laughing. Anyway, that's nothing new.
No, my stupid joke. I used to watch AGTV a lot.
Mm-hmm. You
know, this TV channel focused only on Home Improvement, and you know, you have
faults. Yeah, this was a sitcom, dude. It wasn't
it wasn't like a reality
TV
show.
I think it's Tim like Allen or someone was like the head guy.
Okay, so you will be responsible for finding that for the show notes, right?
Yeah.
I'm really curious now.
I'll send you a photo of that guy. We'll maybe make that guy the cover photo of the episode. Like Jonathan peering over the fence. Anyways, Jonathan, this is going to be an interesting episode because we had a sit down. We've been away for a little bit again. So maybe a quick update, like just to find out what you've been up to, and then we'll talk about the show. And I also have a bit of a trick up my sleeve, and I'm hopefully you're going to flow with me on this one, but let's see. So what have you been up to, mate? Like it's been a couple of, we've spoken before, but we haven't done an episode again in a couple of weeks.
Right. On my side, still working for my startup. The startup I'm working with in West Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Things are tough. I guess everybody listening to this episode in end of June 2020 will say that things are tough for them too.
Yeah.
So we're in B2C. So we're directly impacted by the event. So right now we are in survival mode, and we'll see how it goes. So lots of uncertainty there, and we are doing our best. And on a personal level too, it's had been a couple difficult months.
Mm-hmm.
There were, I don't know, I mean, for those of you listening to that in the future, things got crazy those last 2 months. On top of the coronavirus, we started to perhaps finally raise social issues. And one of those was BLM. And
yep.
And I got more or less involved. I mean, I wasn't down the streets or anything, but I posted on my social networks. Vianney, you probably was like, what? You haven't posted on LinkedIn? It's been what, 4 years?
I actually haven't seen it, dude. But yeah, the fact that you're telling me that you actually posted something on LinkedIn surprises the hell out of me.
Yeah, and same on Twitter and all of that. And it sparked a lot of discussions. And
sorry, I didn't know about it, dude. So can you give a bit more context about it? Like, if you want to talk about it. So you made some social media posts, and did you get some kickback on it, or what happened?
Oh, I thought I told you about that.
Okay. I know you mentioned to me in a previous conversation that you were a little bit, you know, like there was a complexities, but I didn't know that you were actually out there. I mean, I know that you're quite active on Twitter, but I don't know that you actually popped into LinkedIn.
I've been super silent on Twitter recently. I posted twice about the situation. Then I just I deleted the application from my phone because I was getting too angry and unproductive.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been off social media since a month now, probably. And before that, what happened is that I posted on LinkedIn. And I received, there was a guy that sent me a mail telling me that I'm a badger of what he told me? I'm seeding hate and all this kind of shit. Yeah. All life matter what. So I got people around me also trying to explain new racism, which was a cool experience to have. So I will say that, you know, I didn't have a big circle of people around me. That circle was cut, like majorly cut, and it put me a lot of clarity. I'm realizing that for a lot of people, I was the non-threatening minority, you know, the cool black friend. And now they realized I'm not, that I'm like everybody else, that the folks that they are calling thugs are my cousins, my parents, my brothers, my sisters. Your difference doesn't work anymore. So it's been emotionally something to manage. So when you manage all of that on top of your work, it's pretty much really, really, really consuming.
It's also emotionally draining, right? It's a lot of things. Pandemic, BLM, everything happening in one shot.
Fortunately, I'm blessed. I mean, there's no reward to have an amazing partner. And I was able to discuss with this art with her. So my little brother, same thing. Even if in Japan, he kind of supported also what happened. My dad, same thing. It's fun because I never talked so much with my dad since the last 30 years, I believe.
But as a side note, though, you told me a long time ago your dad was quite politically active at some stage, right?
My dad is so happy right now. Dude, my dad
is on
like
fire at the moment. Like he's back in his flow.
My dad, he told me a thing So it's, as you know, he has some health issues, okay?
Yeah.
And he told me a thing that marked me. He told me, you know, dude, if I have to die soon, at least I've seen that in my life, which is something I wouldn't have hoped. And I was like, wow, dude. Wow, okay. And yeah, I've seen. I'm so proud of the Z-Gen in the US. And I'm so proud of seeing that you have everybody involved in the movement. You have indigenous people, you have LGBTQ+, you have Asian minorities in the US, and it's a whole flux of people being like, you know, no justice, no peace. It's been at the same time emotionally intense, but not draining. You see what I mean? Sometimes you have events that are emotionally draining and you are left without energy. This was pretty much the opposite on my side, in that I will be drained, then I will think about what is in line and what is in line for, I mean, knocking on wood, what is in line for my kids to be, our kids to be, and how important it's going to be for them. So if that can, and the fact that change happened, like for real in the US, like they voted laws and they changed the police department in some places, and people, and add people, I mean, add folks on Twitter, especially one folk, friend of mine, designer friend of mine, who reached out to me and told me, hey, John, I know we didn't talk since some time, but I want to get educated about, you know, black issues. So can you tell me what to do? So give me books to read, give me a session to take part of. And I was, wow, I was, it made me so, I won't say happy, it made me so fiery. Can I say that?
Fired up, energized.
And I saw all my, most of my friends are in the US, design folks. And I've seen them, going to manifestations, moving, and first thing first, I was like, yeah, my Twitter people are good people. That was, because I've seen all of them going, moving manifestations, supporting everything. I was so, so proud of them, especially, I know we probably don't listen to me, but Stephen, Jordan, big up. My partner was incredibly supportive. My brother-in-law basically went to a manifestation in Warsaw, and I was like, dude, I was scary for him, actually. Thank you. I appreciate. So he went out, he went to Warsaw to manifest. And on my side, it's been a good time to gather with my family, a good time to talk with my parents, a good time to exchange with my brother. And we got closer at the end of the day.
That's great.
I wouldn't have believed that would be the event. I was expecting my wedding to be the next event in which I would get closer to my family.
Man.
However, that was the event. So now, you know, as a guy said, a guy we are following said, so buckle up, because we are just starting.
Yeah, so I mean, this is a question kind of like floats around in my mind, John, from your perspective, right? Do you think, it's not about me, like, do you think this has got the momentum to continue going? Do you think it's like we've seen this kind of starting to fire up, probably the first time with Rodney King starting to dry and get momentum, and then it kind of fizzles out or gets appeased in some way. Do you think it's going to carry on? Do you think that this time we actually have the momentum to actually push through and make real change happen?
Okay. When it's about that, we're not going to make the world much better in one go. That's not going to happen. In 20 years, racism will still be part of our life. Racism and xenophobia and segregation, all of it will be part in our life. What I see, though, is, to quote...
He's going to fetch a book.
you well know how. So we are four of Sapiens.
Yeah.
It's going to be a generational change that's going to take time, but there is going to be change. And I do think that it's one of those moments. I do think that people, the fact that it's the first time in my life that a white folk reached out to me to understand my issues. It's the first time that wasn't exactly close to me physically to understand my issues. And And this didn't happen in a vacuum, right? So there is a whole context that's happening. Things are actually moving in the US, and I'm extremely supportive. And I'm seeing that BLM became LM. I have seen indigenous community and Aboriginal communities in Australia using the movement for themselves. I've been seeing LGBTQ, because it's Pride Month still in Poland, using the movement for themselves and abroad.
Yeah.
I've seen, yeah, that's another topic, Poland, I guess.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
I've seen Latino and Chicanos in Los Angeles using the movement for themselves. And I've seen, more importantly, a ton of white allies. A ton of them. And I'm like, yeah, this is very, very important for me, because it proves that it's not just a community issue. It proves that everybody is realizing, hey, something is wrong, you know?
Yeah. What's going on here?
And if we make the lives of those folks better, our lives is going to get improved too. That's, I mean, world design, you know, this is what we do, design. We design things to work in another environmental context. So yeah, I do think there is going to be change. I don't expect racism to disappear, okay?
We live in the realities of the world,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. However, I do think that it's going to make the place a tiny bit a better place than 5 years ago.
Yeah,
because scrutiny is going to get better. It's this kind of, like the civil rights movement, it's going to be step by step. Things are going to improve step by step. And I do think that it's one of those improvements, especially what we are going to try in Minnesota to basically reshape the police department to make it less Missy Mikil and more like what it's supposed to be, a supportive tool for the community.
Serving the community, protect them.
Exactly, and use some of that money to prevent crime in the first place. I don't know if you saw the graphs between the budget of the police and education, and it's crazy. So we'll see what happens. It's a huge experiment that's happening. What I'm saying is that there might be less things in the mainstream news about it, but I do know that in my community, people are still like ready to go because there are not so many opportunities. Now I'm disappointed in Europe as a whole, I would say, especially France. I mean, racism doesn't exist in France, right? However, I'm the Commonwealth globally. So the UK, Australia, and the US, things are moving. And yeah, I mean, I'm going to give you a simple example of things that changed, okay? That is going to impact our life on the daily. And it's very, very little, very stupid. I'm not going to talk about a law. I'm going to talk about Reddit. Okay, yeah. Everybody knows Reddit. So for people in Poland who don't know Reddit, it's like vcop.pl, but international. So Reddit hosted a ton of hate mongers and hate communities. So with time, some of them were deleted, but they kept a lot of them. And the issue when you would try to say, oh, freedom of speech and you let fascists have a place, is that fascists destroy freedom of speech. They use freedom of speech to destroy your own freedom of speech. There is a lot of the really good, better explanation about that for me than this one, but that's the gist of it. So you need to let them tell what they want to do, but they should not do it in order to extinguish basically other people's thoughts. And what they did on Reddit is that they organized community to do what they call reds. What are reds? It's an internet thing when you see somebody telling something you don't like. So you're going to meet 200, 300 people from your group, and you're going to downvote their posts.
Okay.
So that nobody sees their posts. This is a common thing. This is why Black Panthers, when Black Panthers went out in movie theaters, it had a very, it had like 60% on IMDb, not because the movie was bad, but because white folks were hurt that there was a black superhero. That's true. I'm not even joking about it. So a lot of those communities were taking place on Reddit. And Reddit, for the longest time, even though we told them this is dangerous, they let, okay, you know, we let them. And especially one of them is called The Donald. And it was basically...
Yeah, I heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's huge. It's... they would... Anytime you will post something that will criticize hyper-conservative view, they will ban you. So much about freedom of speech, you know. But on their side, they will go on other communities and spew their hate, and we wouldn't ban them because we are like, you, we want you to talk. But yeah, it doesn't work this way. It just doesn't work this way. So the CEO of Reddit resigned a week ago.
Yeah.
And he said that Alexei Ohanian, and he said that this is what I'm... not 2 weeks ago. This is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And I want Reddit to hire a black CEO to because he still has part of the board. And they hired Sybil, who is the CEO, who was the CEO of Y Combinator. So Y Combinator, for those who don't know, is the biggest VC fund. Not the biggest. It's, I think it's still Andreessen. It's one of the most known VC funds in the Silicon Valley. They finance companies like little companies like Dropbox or Stripe, you know, little startups.
Little ones.
And Sybil is now. And one of the first steps they did is that they ban all hate mongering communities. So they ban the Donald, they ban all the creep communities, all the misogynist communities, all the red pill communities, and all of that. Because we are saying that it's not about freedom of speech, it's about weaponizing voice to prevent other people to express themselves. This is one of the reasons why I didn't want for the longest time go to YouTube, because going on YouTube and saying as a black folk is you're going to take so much hate in your face, so much hate that I have enough issues. You see what I mean? I don't have time to see people calling me a monkey on the internet. I have this happening in real life, you know. So I'm like, yeah, that's okay. That's why a lot of black communities don't use mainstream social network right now. You know, one of the fun thing is that the communities that I follow are on TikTok, which is really ironic in a way, because it's a Chinese company that is hosting the Gen Z black activist resistance fighting the capitalistic white supremacist system.
Yeah, you're right. So I didn't even think about that.
We'll see what happens. So they tried to block voices, but yeah, we no tech, huh? So it's pretty fun. I'm tired. But not how to say that. I have a lot of energy to talk about it, to fight about it. It's just the whole context is a lot. That's why I deleted social media from my phone, because I really want not to get, you know, I already didn't have news on my phone, as you know well.
Yeah.
But now I also took off a lot of social media because I didn't want to get, you know, just pushed into this, especially that a friend of mine is really, 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 really into the movement and you know, trying to make me read stuff. It's very difficult to do that and be an amazing professional. So, an advice. If you have black folks in your team, okay, or LGBTQ folks in Poland, yeah, be cool with them, because right now they are tired. You know, they are doing a lot of things. They have to manage a lot of things. So support, be allies, okay? Be cool on them, be understanding. They are going to come tired. They are going to be emotionally on the edge. And if you're an ally, your role is to understand that and to give them, you know, some place to breathe.
And listen, right? That's one of the big things, is listen.
Yep. I told you, the best thing, of that whole event is that that guy, that dude from the, he's from Holland, you know, nice guy, extremely good designer, working in New York, all of that, not, you know, coming to me and telling me, I mean, text to Jude, I want to be more than an hashtag. What do I need to do? What should I read? And I was like, okay, shit got serious.
Yeah, it's very, very encouraging to hear that, man. Yeah, Jonah, I mean, the thing is, yeah.
I don't think it's what we planned for that episode, though.
No, I mean, I think this is really powerful. The thing is just as me sitting here, you know, like, I feel like, okay, cool, what can I add to that? That is like, you know, I hear you, mate. And it, you know, my big thing is I hope that we retain the momentum here. I mean, as a South African, you know, it's especially a weird time, right? It's kind of, you sit back, especially as the white South African, you listen to all this and it brings back images of the past. And it, but I mean, I would say one of the things that I've learned specifically through what's happening right now is that I understood racism, right? I mean, we spoke about it before and it was kind of lightly mentioned here, but I think the one thing I have never really understood and actually just gotten to really understand it a little bit more specifically because I think it's a bit more, you know, I'm a bit more mature and I understand the world a little bit better and I see how corporations and systems work is the whole idea of systemic racism because that's the actual problem, right? I mean, I can always go online and say, yeah, I've got black friends and I'm cool with them and we hang out and have a good beer together and, you know, I laugh at their jokes. But the problem is if you don't fix the actual system or address the problems in the system, it's never going to change.
Exactly.
And the thing is, that is the big thing that sits behind this is the system. And sometimes the problem with systems, dude, is that we don't always see the system. I don't know if it makes sense. It's like you're kind of in this thing, right? And you're just going with the flow.
This time has been amazing in terms of speeches and talks by people trying to inspire, like really meaningful and powerful one. There is one for an artist called Killer Mike, which was, I'm going to link it, which was, wow.
Yes, please.
Painful to hear and so profound and so true. Where he's starting by saying, you know, today I woke up and I wanted to see the world burn. And I think we all felt that. We all were like, okay, there is no point. And then you sit down and you're older and you're like, okay, how do we change that? So what my dad told to me, I don't have to tell it to my kid. I mean, I have no doubt that will happen. We don't have to go through the talk. We don't have to get in a stress mode whenever we see somebody representing justice. And one of the key factor and preach, this is exactly what you say, is changing the system itself. So basically all the mechanism that exist in the system in order to prevent minority folks to, minority. Over folks to get access to the same level of chance. And for example, there is a statistics that is used very often by far right white activists in Europe, like in the US, saying, "Oh, you're only 15% of the population. You represent 50% of crime." And what I like to say back to that is that for the same amount of drug consumption in the US, because black folks don't, you know, per citizen don't take more drugs than white folks, but they have 7 more time chances to go to prison for it.
Yeah.
That's systematic change. Over stats. For basically, when I was in New York, okay, you have instance when I'm walking down Broadway Avenue and I have a police car, you know, just following me basically at the same speed as I'm walking. And in my head, it's, if you do something wrong, boy, you're fucked up.
Yeah.
So, and you have as level of stress on the daily. So you can't win when basically the police sees you as the enemy. That's one of the issue. Because even if you're not, they are trained to see you as the enemy because you're more dangerous. There has been a hack, thank you, Anonymous, that hacked police systems files. And they showed how they are trained, like the train documents telling them, oh, you know, you have the right to have this and that and this and that. There is also a very good article on Medium written by a policeman that is Confession of a Bastard Policeman that is really, really good to listen.
Would you mind, like, we didn't discuss this, but like, and I don't want to cut your flow, but like, would you mind popping this, all these links in the show notes? I think super valuable to do, mate.
Oh, I will. I just wanted to support the argument that, the system needs to change. You need to make sure that there is no. And the thing is that the system needs. Okay, I'm familiar with it, but the system needs to change not for black folks. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
It's the system needs to change for everybody else.
Exactly.
That is put aside. Because they don't count, kind of, or they are not, they don't have the right, the right support. And when I see, and you know what was the moment that upset me the most?
No.
It wasn't the 8:46 that this guy, because we, part of the black community, George Floyd killing was yet another event. You know, and this one was particularly terrible because it was on camera and the guy was calling for his mama, dude. I mean, It's really, but I was like, you know, I'm 40 and all of that. I've seen that happening all the time, often enough. So, and not only to black folks. I've seen that happening to indigenous community, all of communities being policized. Okay. Can we call that policized?
Yeah, policed.
You have been policed. Sorry. The thing is, when media in Europe, in the UK, in France particularly, I didn't really check Polish media because we have another context. So for those of you listening, we have Polish elections, which is another bag of hornets to manage.
Yeah.
So when I saw basically white dudes telling Americans that if we like to do that in Europe in general, Americans are stupid, whatsoever. But seeing them saying that, oh, the US, they are racist, they are the racist, they are the this, they are the that. And I'm like, dude, look at your own people. Look, France has been a repressive system, not since US 1792. Okay, but on what base was the US created? No, it didn't just
pop appeared. Out of nowhere, yeah.
You have the blood trail of Belgium, France, the UK is outstanding. And you have no right to tell other people that they are more racist than you. Like, this is the most hypocrite stuff, I believe. In France, it's been documented and over-documented how people from Caribbeans, so my community, and people from African origin, while French, we are not immigrant, technically. We have seen that so, but technically we are not immigrant. While French have been, first of all, same thing as the US, over-controlled, over-policed, have been barred access to political roles. I'm going to just tell you one thing. Do you know there is the same amount, more or less, in population of minorities in France and the US. Can you tell me one black French politician?
That's a good point. No.
And there is probably the same amount. Because you can't, because the system is a pure systematic racist system where you don't have access to all because you're not part of the good communities and you're going to be the non-threatening, you know, the good black friend. And you need to be okay with that because, A, we brought you civilization. And yeah.
You kind of saw that happen in the World Cup, didn't you? Because, I mean, the World Cup representation for France, I mean, they had a strong black contingent, right? And that was representative. And people are going,
Because we are a lot. I think France is like 8. I mean, we don't technically have racial statistics. Adding statistics, but yeah, the proportion is pretty close. Less, more than the UK. I think the UK is actually much less than France. So, and yet we have no representation other than you can be minister for the islands, for the dom-dom, you know. You can put a black folk over there. But yeah, this has been the case since I'm a kiddo. And my dad lived the French repression in the Caribbean in 64. So quick history class, very quick history class. When the Pan-African movement started in the 60s and all those African countries took independence from France, and I'm going to do a little aparté. When all those folks say that, oh, look at Africa, if they had been stayed in France, it would have been better. Dude, Senegal, Ghana were basically the bordel of France. And it's still the case in some African countries. You will see those 60, 70 years old folks getting six girls, you know, paying them. And this was, how would you feel living in that context? Anyway, about their side. So when those countries took independence, 60s, and there was that whole Pan-African movement, the Caribbean tried to do the same. So my island, 64, tried to get more independent because we were always on the short side of the stick. I could talk ages about the Caribbean and all the shit that happened over there. But in this event, what they did is that they sent gendarmes. So gendarmes is basically the kind of SWAT from the continent. And they killed black folks.
Man.
And there was no independentist movement since. Because the message was, shut the fuck up. Okay. Nobody cares about your lives. And it is how it is. And there was that... from people like my dad, or other folks, they were like, okay, let me not, my dad was, he's still strong about all of it and still wanted to see changes. But most folks, what they want is just to have their family safe. And they were like, okay, we can manage this way. There is no point. And perhaps they are right. And perhaps I've been in so many shitty with related relationship the Caribbean in general is really fucked up in terms for a lot of reasons. I know that most of people see it as a paradise and very sun, and why do those folk complain?
But yeah, there is, but it's tourists such, enjoying the sun, right?
It's such a traumatic place for so many reasons, and you know, when folks tell us, oh, you know, you need to get over it and get over slavery or whatsoever, and they don't understand that my grandma Ma was a slave. This is not like, you know, and those traumas they keep going, and families afraid, and they see the news, and yeah, it's you need to be tough. Everybody needs to be tough to make it, right? I still do believe that or and you're a minority in another country, you need to be this level of extra tough. I think you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And what is happening with when this happened, when people from Europe started to point the US and telling that Americans are stupid and American, there's always this, you know, this vista from Europeans about the rest of the world, about Africa, Asia, and, you know, being seeing themselves as superstar or something. And dude, I lost it. I was like, what the fuck you four guys know about racism? Why the fuck do you tell me that racism doesn't exist because you have one black friend and you're going to eat with him and you spend sport with him? What do you have a black manager? You know, things like that. Probably yeah. not. No, yeah. You see? Where do you see them at jobs? Public function. Most of Caribbeans, for example, are working nurses job in France. Half of my family, nurses, and because that's as meritocratic as possible way to exit. But when you take corporate jobs, then the statistics just destroy it.
Just drop.
I spent a lifetime of being the black. Kind of the black token. In France, in Luxembourg, in Poland. And what I've seen, and I went for very good business schools. And so I have a very solid curriculum and all of that. And what I've seen is that even when you're in school, okay, basically they teach you how the system works. Because none of us come from money, okay? Because money is a generational thing. You build money based on generations. Mm. And we don't have generations. So that's when we talk about systematic change, this is part of it. Because you will have, it's very, very rare. And if you take off, people like Zuma.
Yeah, Zuma.
It's yeah. very, very rare that there is an amount of wealth behind that supports you. And you go to business school, take my case. There is like promotion for 100 kids, and there is like seven, eight minority folks, you know, that you're going to put on your posters and see, we have black people. And what's going to happen is that everything you're going to do is going to be seen on, you might not succeed because you're token. No, bitch, I was second at the test. But this is how people are going to see you. That's one of the first thing. It's the first time I'm so rough in my language in episodes.
You're rolling, man.
and the second thing is that it's very insidious. What's going to happen is that people are going to have ski trips, very expensive stuff, and you can't afford to do that. Me, I had to work during my scolarity system. I'm not saying that. All white kids are privileged and all of that. Because even there, you will have, you know, classes.
Yeah.
And that's the class system above. But you will never have access. That's the thing. You will never have access to a range because you don't have generational money. So there is you, and none of you have generational money. So there is no network you can build. And we both know.
You're starting on a bad foot, right? That's the thing. You're starting behind already.
What my friend told me, so when he sent me, he told me that through all his readings and all he discovered, he realized that black folks, it's like he started at zero and we started at minus one. And it came, my partner corrected that. No, you started at zero, then women start at white women start at a minus two, LGBTQ start at minus two, and you have all those levels. You just have the privilege to start at zero. We are not saying that you like white privilege is not that you're rich and you have everything. It's just that you don't have, there is a set of problems that you will never have to manage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ever.
I agree.
And it's like a black swan for you. because you don't know it exists or it shouldn't exist. And, you know, it's...
And I think that is the problem. Like, you don't see it. And I'm not saying like a denial thing here. The thing is, it's just when it comes to light, you go, oh, shit. It's like, you know, like, because you're looking forward. You're not looking at the people behind you. Or, you know, yep. When I'm talking back to this race, is that, and that's where, we need to focus.
Yeah, that's your point about systematic change. It's not about making, it's not about creating only equality, because equality means things like affirmative actions, which are useful. So basically you push more, you create quota and all of that, but you will always be seen as, oh, this guy made it because she's a woman, because he's gay, because he's black, because he's indigenous. And you will always have this stigma above you. So that's one part, you know. But we never talk about, you know, all those Harvard kids that get in Harvard because their parents have a lot of money, you know?
Exactly.
this is a system that exists. All schools are doing that, but we don't talk about that. Okay, so much for your meritocracy. And the other point is that when people say no justice, no peace, it's really about that. It's not about equality. We don't want to have forced equality. We want the system to be just. The system itself. So which means that you need to make sure that everybody got equal access to resources. We need to stop things like gentrifications. Gerrymandering, not gentrification. Sorry, gerrymandering.
Gerrymandering,
Where basically you push all the people you don't want in area, and you're going to give them the shitty school, and you're going to put a law saying that all kids from that area needs to go to that school.
Exactly.
Which exists in France, by the way. So basically it's like, it's a mix of BLM, under the name BLM, basically what ways, it's a mix of class relationships. There is social change needed, ethnies, race, relationship, whatever you call it. It's ambitious, but at least we talk about it. This is the thing that that is the most inspiring. It's not that people went in the streets to go in the streets and to be angry at things. Okay, there are the slogan of BLM is no justice, no peace, yeah. And this is what we wish for. There is somebody that said that we are not searching for vengeance. Okay, we just change for justice for everybody. Because if we search for vengeance, that's a whole other set of issues, and that's not happening, right?
Yeah.
It's yeah. Tell me.
No. I don't want to break your flow, because like what you're saying is interesting, and I want you to speak about it. But the thing is, like, one thing I wanted to add, though, you know, and I want to test this theory with you, because now I've heard you, right? You've spoken about this, but there's something that triggered with me, because the thing is, I'm always sensitive about, you know, and the thing is, I have empathy. So at the moment when I listen to you, and I'm trying to use my design things that we always flap on about and talk shit about, it's actually, you know what? For one time, Vanna, shut the fuck up and listen to what Jono's got to say, right? But the thing is also, I also have deep down this thing is like, I'm going like, okay, cool. I'm hearing you and I'm thinking about what happens in South Africa. And like, and I see around me, like, you know, let's say for example, like a white male is now, you know, like there's a lot of people say like, we need to drag down the white males that are everywhere. And it is a problem, but I need to be careful now, make my statement here. But I'm also concerned about, you know, like, I need to choose my words now, because you know, because I want to make a point and see if it aligns with what you're saying. Because at the moment the focus is BLM, right? And it's like, let's bring down the system, no justice, no peace, blah blah blah. And then you have like little whitey me going like, oh shit, things are going to change, I'm not going to have things anymore, you know, like, or it's my fault. Or but the thing is, what I'm hearing what you're saying though, and I think this is where the big crux is, and perhaps this is what we all need to start understanding and start focusing on, is that, and I believe in what I'm going to say now, is that if we fix the damn system, And maybe it's not about fixing the system. Maybe it's throwing the system out the door. You know, if we fix it, we are all going to benefit, because we are all fools if we think the system is benefiting anybody except for a very few elite people.
Exactly. Exactly. That's why I love what you're saying. And you chose your word well.
Yeah, I need to.
That's why the BLM movement is very linked to the anti-capitalism movement. There is no one without the other. That this system was built on based on a capitalist oppressive system, right? And I'm on a list now. So hello, people from the FBI. Mm-hmm. It serves. I mean, I'm just going to give you one statistics. Okay, during that world pandemic, everything goes to shit, right? Every business. There is one business that has been resilient. Guess what? Luxury.
Yeah.
There is a segment of people that doesn't give a shit. And had never gave a shit about anything in their life. And they see all of that like you will see on reality TV.
Yeah.
It happens, but it's never going to affect them. Now, I'm not going to go into conspiracy theories and all that, because I don't believe all of that.
But I do
but
think
what
that,
I believe is that, the 1% is not so far as we believe. It's not like people, you know, they like to do all those memes about people in a dark room. No, dude, this is not people in a dark room. That can be your friends that get power and are motivated to keep that power for themselves. We see that all the time. We see people that come with the best of intentions telling you, oh, we are going to bring peace. And the moment they get power, they are like, hey, I can take more of it and give it to my kids and my friends and let's cook the books. And I mean, we have a minister of health in Poland that basically moved for 400 million zloty for his benefits of his brother. This guy is a doctor. You know, he's supposed to be one of the good ones. Yeah. He's the guy that basically went to study to help people. And still, the moment the guy was in power, what did he do? He served his own interest. And the only way to prevent this to happen is to have a strong, strong systematic change that prevents people to do it in the first place. So you take out the options. You can do like Norway. In Norway, all taxes are public. Everybody knows what everybody is making.
Yeah.
For real. There is a public registry and you can check what your CEO make. And it's not their salary. It's like the full tax thing. You can build something like that. What prevents us to build something like that?
Yeah,
I do believe that if we will do a survey in Poland, 90% of people want that. But still, this is not going to happen right now. You know, because you need to have a very strong sense of what is good for the community. So what you call in South Africa, Ubuntu.
Yeah.
And not what is good for me and my crew, kind of. And the issue is that people are always in the me and my crew mode. And the reason why people are in the me and my crew mode is that every fucking movie we have watched, every piece of content published between the 70s and 90s was focused into the capitalist system where you have one hero that gets everything and everybody gets. So basically you are raised on that. And one of the things what they say that is written about the Z generation and the the generation that makes change things is that they are raised on anti-capitalistic documents.
Ideals.
Harry Potter is communist as fuck. Harry Potter, all most of fantasy, all Marvel is anti-capitalist as fuck, because when it was written, it was about, no, sorry, I shouldn't say anti-capitalism, because capitalism by the book is supposed to be good. It's just the neo-capitalism, basically how we call that, capitalism for the other and communism for the rich. You know, so that's why, and you have a generation that was raised on that and that believe and they have energy and they're young and they're like, okay, our dads, that generation, their dads were fucked over, okay, by the boomer. And they are growing up and they know that they are getting screwed because they are 20 to 25. The economy is shit. there's a pandemic outside. And they're like, okay, so whose fault is that? You know, sure, it's not ours. Sure, it's not ours.
Let's blame China.
Let's blame whoever is not me, whoever is not my system, whoever is not.
And I think this is the one thing we all need to do, dude, because I think like listening to you, and I think we're digressing now like really deeply into this thing, and I'm going to leave this episode as it is. But as we start thinking about wrapping this up, I think what I've heard from you or what we've discussed is that we need to start thinking about the fact that actually, because I think this is a mistake a lot of us make, is that we think we are not the community. We are privileged and we're not the community. And if, you know, yes, we are privileged, like I'm privileged, but the thing is we are still community. And we need to stop listening to politicians, leaders, whatever, who is trying to fool us from taking our eye off the ball. Because I feel like a lot of things that's happening currently in Poland, and sorry to say it, is that it's diversive tactics that takes people who are desperate to keep living and making a living and staying employed, taking their eyes off the actual issues that are out there, you know, and saying, you know, rather than, you know, we should be actually saying, hey, let's address all these things. Clean the slate and start from scratch, you know, and say, you know, like let's all start at zero, you know. I'm not saying we're all starting at 100 or 500 plus. Let's all start at zero.
Nice,
you know,
nice one.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I think the big thing at the moment is we need to educate ourselves and really like start, you know, veering away from these bullshit memes and all these other nonsense, and like, you know, start. Yeah, you know, I want to say take action, but I also think like the one thing that I want to start avoiding is like taking action, and like I'm doing now, flapping my lips, is like really hearing and understanding what is going on, like really understanding, because there's complexities. I feel daily like the wool is being pulled over my eyes all the time, and we need to shake this shit off, and then reassess the situation and take action.
You know, there is same thing, knocking on wood. If we have kids, my kids are going to mix. They will have a white mother and a black dad. They will have coming from two different continents, dad working for yet another continent. and we are going to have those tough conversations. I have those conversations right now with my cousins and my little cousins and all of that. And the only, to relate to just what you said, what we can do in terms of actions, basically we need to take into account what's happening right now, try to figure out how you can do good for you and your community, your direct community, first of all, always. But also your global community.
Oh, yeah.
Because, yeah, at the end of the day, we all want to be just happy. And the issue is that for some folks, for them to be happy, it needs to go through other folks not getting happy. Consensus comes from dissension very often. And this is how you need to see the news, interpret information, read by yourself, like get in the history books, because this happened already multiple times. So get to know what happened in the Caribbean, in Haiti. Get to know what happened in South Africa. Get to know what happened in Rwanda. Get to know what happened in Vietnam. Get to know what happened when Japan opened the borders. Get to know about what happened in the US. A lot of those difficult, events have happened and will happen. And there is a lot to learn from past events. So I'm going to finish by saying what I told to my friend. How can you help? The most direct way is to give money to associations around you that are helping folks. So if you're in Poland, if you can give to LGBTQs, communities, associations, do that.
you know, on my side, giving to BLM. So you can do that. That's the most like immediate. However, I do think what is even more important is to get the currency of education. And yeah. Get the currency of education. I'm going to take simply the example of my partner. All of that happened. What she did, she started becoming for Michelle Obama. She wants to know the experience of a black woman that succeeded. She or me getting more into James Baldwin work, learning on a more personal level, learning more about the Caribbean and getting closer to my dad in a way. It does mean a very introspective moment because I kind of understand why my dad came back in the Caribbean, disgusted by Europe. Because one thing I didn't tell, one of my best friends, my only Caribbean friend in Poland, decided to leave Europe last month because of all those events. And he told me, I'm done at this point. I can't anymore. And seeing that happening, I was like, wow. Yeah, dude, that was my dad. That's exactly the reason I'm alive today. Because my dad at one point was just, it was a very oppressive 70s in 70s, 80s in France. It was part of a movement that France wanted to make disappear, the Pan-African movement. And at one point he was like, I'm going to try to bring the change in my place. It didn't work out at all. But yeah, that's what pushed him. So, and I'm like, dude, I'm in the same position as him, pretty much. I'm not going to leave. You know, I still plan my future here. I don't know exactly where, but in the Western world in general. I've seen so many sign of hope and progress. I've been really impressed by some of my friends, my white friends. I feel I need to precise that went out and you know, they went in the streets in the US and they took risks and they took, you know, gas and all of that to defend my rights. And I'm like, yeah, we can get through this together. It's not a question of, it's not about black and white or yellow or red or whatsoever. It's about us being together as a community that want to create a just system for our kids and our grandkids and them to be proud of us because we did the work the same way we are proud of people in the 60s, the same way we are proud of Mandela. We are those people now. It's our age. We're 40, we're 50. We are in charge now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Jono, that is a powerful end to an episode. Man, I can just say thank you. This went where I didn't expect, but I'm happy. I'm glad that you shared your experiences. And I'm happy to put this episode out there. And I'm going to just say thank you.
Thanks for listening.
Ciao.